I want to welcome everybody to our sixth seminar in the PPS Success Mentor Teleclass Series. I'm sure most of you recognize my voice by now, but for those of you who are joining us for the first time, my name is James Phelps, and in addition to being your host for tonight's call, I'm the PPS Success Educational Coordinator. Tonight we have with us PPS Success Mentor Chris Timpert, who will be discussing the power of choice. Chris is trained with PolCheck and is both a Check Level 4 and Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 3, as well as a PPS Success Mastery Practitioner, and having completed the full PPS Success Mastery Program, which is no mean feat, I will tell you that. As an accomplished holistic coach and fitness professional, Chris guides her clients through their challenges in order to facilitate their passage into freedom and happiness. In her own words, Chris is a person who found balance from going through the PPS Success lessons. As the dean of the PPS Success Mastery Program, I've witnessed Chris dive into those lessons, and I've seen a genuinely beautiful and amazing transformation. And PPS has also been just extremely fortunate to have Chris share some of her personal explorations through her artwork. And those of you who read our Fulcrum newsletter have probably seen and benefited from her art and poetry. In the PPS program, we have a motto that you can't love anyone better than you love yourself, and you can't help anyone better than you help yourself. I know that Chris has really taken that motto deeply to heart and followed it. So I also know, consequently, that she has a great deal to offer. So I think this is really going to be a special teleclass tonight. Now, before we begin, I just want to remind everyone that we do record these calls. So if you happen to be in a high traffic area or you're on a cell phone that might pick up some background noise or echo effects, I recommend that you mute your line until you have a question by pressing *6. And then if you want to join in the conversation, you can unmute your phone at any time by pressing any button on your phone pad. So with those little details out of the way, welcome, Chris. It's great to have you with us tonight.
Wow, James. I'm very grateful for your words, and it's really wonderful to be present with these PPS students. And you know, I would really like this to just kind of be a conversation forum. I've learned so much through the PPS program, and I'm prepared to be here tonight to just basically be vulnerable and share myself with everyone. And rather than kind of get into a lecture mode, I'd love if you would participate with me.
That sounds great. I love these participatory calls.
It makes me feel more like I'm sitting with friends, you know. But, you know, for me, to begin to even talk about the power of choice, it's important for me to just let everybody listening get a general idea of what it was like when I was moving through the PPS program. Just very briefly, you know, as a little kid, my mother didn't want me. And it's interesting how as you grow up with something like that, you basically push it aside and you just, you try to win your parents' love, and eventually you just say, well, she's a jerk, I hate her, and you move on with your life. So when I came to lesson two, it was like, you know, I started to unwind all these wounds again, and I started to become more aware of the pain that was inside me. And what actually happened for me is I became so aware that I was creating all this suffering in my life that I was so ashamed that I became split in my personality, and I couldn't function anymore with people. So I literally moved myself away for about 6 months and had to sit in quiet and just, like, detached myself from everything because, you know, I just needed to get clear, you know, on who I was. So, and I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. I was going to say, maybe, because I know we do have a few people probably with us who aren't really familiar with Lesson 2 and what goes on in it. Maybe you could tell our students a little bit about it, your understanding of Lesson 2 and kind of what the goals of Lesson 2 are.
Well, you know, for me, James, it was, like I said, it just, Lesson 2 was just, it helped me go back into my past. It helped me... you know, I had been walking through my life numb. In fact, really, all I was is I was like a piece of glass that was broken in a million pieces, and I was just duct taped together, and I was just walking through life looking for love. I was just looking to matter, looking to feel validated. And anyway, like I said, when the program came out, I thought, well, this is where I'm going to find my confidence. This is where I'm going to get a hold of myself in PPS. So when I got into Lesson 2, the challenges were when I got into those mandalas, drawing the cage, drawing myself behind the bars, and what was holding me, what was confining me. You know, and you, I just started realizing, you know, that how empty I was. And then, you know, after doing lesson two, I actually moved out into the world and started living the wounds again that I experienced years before. And Paul, you know, he watched me go through the whole process. And, you know, the amazing part about it is while I was walking around, this person's doing this to me and that person's doing that to me. You know, Paul came right into my face and said, Chris, you're just seeing yourself. That's only happening to you because that's what you do to other people. And that's through lesson two, you start realizing, oh, my God, you know, everything I'm seeing out there in other people, I'm just seeing myself. And then you start, you know, when you're judging people and blaming somebody for where you are or saying somebody's a jerk, you realize, my God, I'm just talking about myself. And that's exactly why it got to a place for me that it was like, oh, my God, I'm creating misery. And you know, my ego parts were so desperate to die in the shame of it all. And, you know, I had a couple kids and my home, and it wasn't possible for me to do anything like that. So it was like I moved into a different way to go kind of die, if you will. So the ego parts could, you know, your ego basically, it's always controlling you typically until you heal and find yourself. The ego is always calling shots. It's always defended. You know, it's always blaming. I mean, it's just the game of life, in a sense. And I became very aware through lesson two that this was the game that I was playing. And going away and being quiet was the only way that I could be present with myself. I know that's kind of hard. That's kind of hard to explain. But, you know, it was like I wanted love so bad. So I would have done anything for somebody to love me. I would have given myself away in any way, shape, or form so I would matter. So walking away and going into a quiet place for myself, I got to sit with the temptations of the ego telling me, come on, you know, go do this, go be that, go do anything so you can be validated and you can matter. And I sat with myself and allowed that part of me to just talk while I began to meditate and draw mandalas and nurture myself through poetry rather than looking to everything outside myself to find love. You know, because when you're a kid and your own mother doesn't love you, it's literally like you're in a room with newspaper and lumber and there's no match. So how are you supposed to start a fire with love? You don't even know how. So, like I said, so in this experience, you know, and with Paul's help and, of course, like I said, the lectures were very easy in lesson two, but when they make you actually do the work and the ego parts are telling you, you can't draw. That mandala is horrible. You don't know what you're doing. You know, you already are getting stuck where the ego doesn't want you to change because, you know, your identity, what you're given when you're a child, you know, this stuff is like, it loves to be in the same experiences all the time. It doesn't like change. So when we start to grow, we meet resistance with the ego. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, 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 and this is why we set lesson two is managing yourself. We set it so early. You know, it's part of that motto that I was talking about earlier, that you can't help anybody until you really help yourself, and that means looking in like you're talking about very much.
Right.
So, yeah.
So the first thing for the power of choices is then to simply just become aware. You become aware that you're empty. If you are empty, and there's something that you're looking for, you know, when I get that new job or when I find this person or when I finish school, whatever it is that you're projecting out into some other place, someday you're going to be happy, to be present with that. And, you know, how can I say? You know, I always go blank on these calls and I apologize. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a spontaneous speaker. But the awareness has to be there that you're not present with yourself. Because the mind, the ego parts, it only knows duality. It doesn't know the middle way. And life is duality, basically. Everything in life, you have love and hate and light and dark and good and bad. And I love to use the analogy of the Monopoly board. So when we're living in our mind or our ego parts that are wounded and looking for validation, love, whatever it is we need so we can be whole, we're kind of on the outside of the board going around. And if you play Monopoly, you're always landing on something where you're earning money. You're always landing on something where you're spending money. It's always, always, always. You know, it's never just win, 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 win all the way around the board. And if you ever do win the game, there's always a loser, and then there's always hard feelings at the end of the game anyway. So the trick is to become consciously aware of the moments in your life when things are really bad, because you can't have bad without, you know, good. They have to exist together. So finding the middle way is learning to allow wherever you are to simply be as it is. So if you're in a really horrible spot, the economy, you've lost all your money, you know, you're going to be kicked out of your house, you know, you can't let the ego parts take over control, run around, you know, and try to make your life better. You need to simply allow where you are. You know, like Eckhart Tolle says, you just need to be present with what is. Just allow it. Embrace it. Let it be what it is. And in that presence and in that allowing, the consciousness becomes so sharp that that's when doors open. That's when you find the middle way. That's when you find that place on the Monopoly board where every time you become present and conscious in that moment of whatever's happening, you kind of start working your way into the middle of the board. And when you get to the middle, you don't have to spin around the board so much. So it's a lot less stressful to exist there. So the first choice that we have to make in our lives is to just, we have to become aware of our behavior, aware of our judgments, aware of our needs. And, you know, not for nothing, you know, one of the best ways to heal self is to be willing to be vulnerable, you know, to be willing to share your emotions. You know, people think that when they hold their feelings on the inside, that makes them so strong. But it's really backwards. When you hold your feelings on the inside, you're a coward and you're just weak and you're all puffed up on the outside to look strong. So it really takes a great deal of strength to express vulnerability. And to be willing, and you know, to the degree, as Paul says, you can be vulnerable with another, you can be with yourself, and then you can be in a place where you forgive yourself for making poor decisions or poor choices. And you know, when you start forgiving and having compassion for yourself, you start forgiving other people. So far, so good, right? You want to guide me along, or that sounds okay so far?
Oh, it sounds wonderful, and I really love the Monopoly metaphor. I think that I've never heard that used before in that way, but I think it's fantastic because it does really capture that sort of up and down. It's either great, you know, you're hitting $200, right, and or whatever it is, or you're landing on prison, right? Do not pass go, do not collect $200, or you know, and so that sense that it's you're kind of on a roller coaster. It's all good or bad, and getting caught up in that, it's either really good or it's really bad. That kind of roller coaster really is a great way of capturing that, the sense that it's all dualities and the need to kind of find that middle way. I really love that metaphor.
Right. Well, you know, the mind or the ego parts, our ego parts, you know, we're beautiful souls. We're also egos with identity, but the mind only knows how to love and hate. It doesn't know anything else. So if somebody's in love with you and then they're not in love with you, they have to hate you. So that's why they say it's really great when couples fight, because if you're fighting, it means you love each other, because the mind, the ego part, doesn't know the difference. But when you're present with your consciousness, And you're in the middle way. This is the beautiful part of PPS that would be so lovely if it could touch the lives of everyone. Because right now, ego is ruling the world. The world is falling apart. Everybody, this person's better than that person, and this person, whatever their political party, and it goes on and on and on. Who's better? And everybody's fighting and killing each other. So the beautiful part about finding self is growing into a maturity of the middle way. So to do that, and you want to be a lover, you have to know that to love someone, hate exists. But the trick is that when hate shows itself, rather than embrace it and condemn and slaughter or shoot the other person, you simply say, well, there's hate. You know what? That has to be here because I love so much. But I'm not going to act on it. I'm just going to recognize and respect that it has to exist, because that's what existence is, and allow it to pass. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is with anything. You know, that's why it's wonderful to, when you learn about self and the choices, like I say, the greatest choice is to become aware of your own self, aware of what you say about other people. Watch yourself. You go to the food store and you know, everybody you look at, you're judging them. You're doing it without even realizing you're doing it. You know, this person's that, or that person's overweight, or wow, that lady is so pretty, or look at that guy's car, that's a nice Beamer, what an ass he is. You know, it's always something. And then say to yourself, why am I doing that? Why am I judging these people? What is it about me? Why do I need that pat on the back? Why do I need to be better than that person? And, you know, this is important stuff. And a lot of times, see, now I feel like I'm getting into a groove now. It's good.
Yeah,
honey.
It's great.
So this is just the way I am. See, I always try to write stuff down, and then I'm like, there's too much in my head to do that. So I need to just be able to flow. So I apologize. Thank you for bearing with me. You know, so we get to these places. And, you know, we all do it. We all judge. It's a human thing. You get just become aware that you're doing it. That's where your consciousness starts to grow right there. Is that, wow, I really ripped that guy. Why would I even tear that guy apart? He's got a new Beamer. Okay, I'm jealous. You know, I wish I had a new BMW. You know, okay, well, now I work on why do I need to be attached to a BMW? You know, and anyway, this is all growth. It's beautiful stuff. Most people walking around just judge everybody, blame everybody, and, well, you know, lots of them. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But the fun part when you're healing and doing PPS and growing and making healthy choices for yourself is you say, wow, where did I learn that? You know, when is the last time I felt that, you know, I didn't get my share? Why am I jealous about that guy's car? And in those moments, this is such a great opportunity. You know those big spotlights they use at the mall? There's like three of them when a new mall opens and they're swirling around in the sky. You take one of those spotlights and you just turn it around and shine it back into your past. So whether it's somebody insults you, you get angry at somebody, you blame somebody, take that spotlight and turn it around and choose to sit with yourself and be consciously aware as you look back into your past at every moment that you can remember when you felt that way before. And the beautiful part about doing that is that when you take the consciousness back into your past and see these events, you can heal them. The tricky part is that there's so much of, you know, ourselves that we're unconscious to. You know, like for me, you know, as a kid, I took some pretty nasty beatings and, you know, I blocked out a lot of stuff. So when I would go back in my lessons and go back to my past and different things, you know, I wasn't uncovering all of it. And I remember on a call I had with Paul, I was like, Paul, he's like, I said, I got some shortcuts. He's like, well, what's a shortcut, Chris? I said, well, the shortcut is, you know, realizing that you're your mother and father, like it or not. Even if you think you're not, you are. If your father was this way and you're the total opposite, it makes you the same thing. I said, you've got to heal the stuff with your parents. And Paul says, well, you know what? That's in my very first handout for BPS.
That's funny.
So I said, well, I missed it, you know. Yeah. Hey, but not for nothing. In the Bible, I think Jesus says, kill your parents too, in a sense. Kill the voices of your parents in your head if you want to follow me, in a sense. So I missed that too. So I had to go out and find that myself. But the interesting thing about doing that, this is how we all get so numb and so stuck. And this was a great lesson for me in growing, was, you know, you're so loyal to your parents, even though, like, my mom at the time, I mean, I've really healed a lot from growing through PPS and my own little place of quiet when it comes to the relationship with her. But, you know, you've got to go back and look at everything that you got from your parents, you know, what the relationship was, and this is how you find out yourself. You know, I had a point, I just lost it because, like you said, I'm running on like no sleep here tonight. Just try to help me get back to my point, James. Where was I?
Well, you had started talking about how. The lesson from Paul, right, and a discussion about what happened in your revelation about what Jesus had said about you need to kill the voices.
Wow, you're going somewhere else. That's okay. I'll find.
All right.
Yeah. No. The important thing is that to really heal ourselves, we really need to be receptive to looking at our parents. And I do apologize because I am, like, on absolutely no sleep right now. I knew I would probably be a knucklehead tonight. But it's because of our loyalty, because they're our family. And even though they might not have been what we wanted them to be, in fact, we probably spent most of our young life trying to change our parents because we saw how messed up they were and when we couldn't change them, that's when we typically move out into the world and try to save somebody else, because we're sure that we can matter if we save somebody. I apologize.
No.
So, you know, this is, like I said, the loyalty is what keeps us
right
from, how can I say, healing ourselves. So, you know, if your dad was an alcoholic and you don't have anything to drink, you're really just like him. So what we have to do, in a sense, we have to get new parents inside ourselves. We have to recognize that we're not growing because we're being loyal to mom and dad. So if we're indifferent to others, if we're racist, if we're whatever it is that we've got going on that we learned when we were little kids, the reason why we're not changing is because we feel we're going to get kicked out of the tribe. We're not going to be a part of our family anymore. And, you know, that's really what happens. When you lose your so-called identity and you find self and you become centered, you lose a lot of people. You know, because you can't be associated anymore, because you're letting go of all these different parts of you that were comfortable. And you do, in a sense, you let go of your family. You become yourself. And it's a very shaming, very scary place to be. And, you know, that's why it's important to be vulnerable with self and to sit with your own self and uncover these things. And this is that's one of the main reasons why people stop at lesson two. They absolutely stop in their tracks and get stuck. And their mind just tells them, this is stupid, I can't draw this picture. And then there are other people that they just basically, they zip right through lesson two and kind of just skim over it without really getting deep into it. You know, and they'll just continue to go on and live their lives perpetuating all the stuff that they had prior, but they still got through lesson two. So the people that are stuck in lesson two, they're actually godsend. They're great. They're the ones that are, in my opinion, you know, they're really going to grow a great deal from it, because it's the loyalty that they're unconscious to that's keeping them frozen in that place. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes. Yes, you know, I've watched people, you know, in my position as the educational coordinator, really, you know, struggle with that mastering self lesson, and of course it's because if it's taking you a long time, it's because you really are taking that time to look back inwards, and that's and working on that working on yourself is it's a lot harder than even working with other people, right? So it's an ongoing process. So you're right. People who are working, really taking a while to work with lesson two are they're doing some good.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, this is why the mentor program is great, because, you know, like having choice, or knowing that you have choice, or knowing that's very powerful, it's kind of like handing you a sharp sickle and saying, you know what, here's your path. You know, you have to cut your way through your own path. But knowing that you have a choice, and really, you know, out of all the core values checks have, the number one core value should be to be consciously aware. Just be aware. And whatever the moment is, just allow whatever it is to be. I mean, it sounds so simple, but it's all you need to do to find self. Rather than try to shove water uphill, that I've been doing, gosh, Paul yelled at me for that for many years. You just have to sit and let it be. And, you know, Osho talks a lot about choiceless awareness. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. You know, this synchronicity and serendipity of life basically means that, you know, what's coming is coming anyway. You know, the day you were born was set, and the day that you're going to die is already figured out. You know, when you go, it's your time, in a sense. And you've heard that lots of times, people actually pass on and they're told to come back, people that have, after, you know, near-death experiences. So what's in between that is choice. And really the only choice is, you know, I mean, it comes down to choosing to complain about what's happening or just allow it. And the cool thing about, well, now a lot of people can, that's where I wrote the article to begin with, because there was so much debate. Well, how can that be? That doesn't make sense. That's disempowering. But for me, it's like, that's not disempowering at all. It's a relief. What a relief it is to know that where you are right now is perfect. You don't have to beat yourself up. You didn't do anything wrong. You haven't made any mistakes. You're going through a path that you're supposed to go through. And even though you might think you made a mistake, when you get down the road a little bit further and you turn around, you're going to say, you know what, that was really necessary. that I did that. And even though that was really awful and it was very painful, that's why I can stand over here in this place, you know? But you can't see that. You know, you need hindsight for that, in a sense. But you don't realize it when you're in it. So that for me, is very powerful. And now, how I got that and a lot of this knowledge was simply by being with myself in meditation. And I was the worst meditator on the planet. Paul used to always tell me, go sit and be quiet. I could not sit and be quiet. My mind was running, all kinds of crazy things. And one day he said, you know, just get a blanket. I want you to drag it outside and just go lay outside and stare at the sky. And, you know, I was just, I've got to meditate. You know, he told me, this is your next great breakthrough. You've got to find yourself. So I dragged this blanket outside and laid on it, and I had this moment where I became so relaxed and so comfortable. It was a beautiful day that I couldn't tell myself any different from everything else that was outside, and it was a moment. But then that moment led me to sit more, and I've gotten myself into a place where, well, not when my daughter's up sick all night, but, you know, I'm up every morning, and I'll sit quietly with myself. And when you're sitting quiet, and you stop the mind, and you can even ask your mind, works for me, I'll say, you know what, I just want to sit quiet for a minute. Maybe you can just take a rest. We'll think about all that stuff in a few minutes. And I usually get peace. And in that quiet place, that's usually when you start to meet, you know, your gut or your soul or whatever you want to call it, that inner voice that starts telling you about what you should be doing or where you should be going. And it's amazing where I've moved through my life has... The last 2 years has all been based on what I feel inside myself I need to do. And so far, I've really just allowed things, and things are just unfolding. So it's not like I'm telling people to do something that's ridiculous. It really seems to work for me. You know, it takes a lot of struggle out of life. And, you know, I suffered awfully through finding this place. I mean, it was just the most painful experience of my life, to be alone for 6 months with myself. And, you know, I've suffered some horrible injuries and been through some terrible things. So, I mean, when I say that I mean it with all my heart, there's nothing more painful. But, you know, when you get to that place where you can know yourself and be in the middle most of the time, it's so much less suffering. So it's like it is painful to do it, but if you can use the program, the PPS, and you know, just be more vulnerable. You can get there so much easier. And then your life doesn't have to be a constant, you know, one day it's a good day, the next day it's a bad day. Just to become aware that there's always good and there's always bad. And suffering never, ever goes away. But it doesn't have to be every day of your life. I mean, you're being human, you know, you lose someone you love or your neighbor's house burns down or whatever happens. That's just life. Things happen. So, you know, it's not like you can be in a place of complete bliss. And it's also important to understand that when you get to that place of consciousness and awareness and you can be present with the moment, that's a precious thing. That's your treasure. And that has to be respected. And you don't just, like, get there one day and then it just takes over and you're all good. It's a constant respect for that place. And it's constant choices that you have to make to remain there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I was going to say it's really valuable. And here I think that you know, where you started at with your meditation at first, you know, I know a lot of people who have said the very same thing to me about meditation, that I just can't do it because my mind is always racing. I'm always thinking about something. Even if when I'm trying to meditate, I'm thinking about trying to meditate, right? And it seems to be such a very difficult process. And so, I think it's really great to hear that. You know, you can, you know, get to that point where your mind will relax, but you got to try it.
Yeah, well, I have to share, you know, I got so good at it because all you need is a taste of it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And the best part is once you get a taste of that place, well, as soon as you go back into the mind and you start getting into the past and the future and projecting and all this other stuff, you start realizing how comfortable it felt being in that little place of meditation, even if it only lasted a minute. And that's all it takes is that sweet little spot. And, you know, well, I've got children, and, you know, I take care of everything around the house and all kinds of different things, so I don't get a whole lot of peace. So it was like that was what kept luring me back to meditate more. And then in doing so, my inner voice got so clear with me that, you know, I ended up going off to the Holistic Institute in New York and studying still with Stephen Robinson, and he's a medium in the city. And, you know, we sit, and now, you know, he has taught me many other ways to sit quiet, and they go into trance, as they say. And it's so much fun. For me, it's entertainment. To be like a John Edwards show is what it's like.
Yeah. And I can ask you, what is it, do you think, about pulling the blanket out and lying out in the open that made that sort of work for you when a lot of other things hadn't?
You know, I think just for me, James, what it was is I had been trying so hard. I've been, you know, I knew that I was in a place that I was just, I had to get myself under control. And it was just like, you know what, this is it. I'm going to try this. Maybe it's just, I don't know. You know, it was just the right time for me that it had to be. And it just, you know, it, like I said, it was just happened to be a beautiful day, and I just got to a place with the blue sky and the trees and the leaves, and it just took my mind off my suffering. And I had a moment of where I wasn't suffering. And, you know, really what it is it's all suffering. It really is. It's just sometimes you think you're happy, and that's really just mild suffering. Mm-hmm. But then the suffering comes again. Because you really are, the only real happiness is when you know who you are, when you're yourself, when you're not your parents and you're not your identity. And, it's, you know, today it's like, you know, babies are born and they come into the world this beautiful pureness, this pure love, this clean slate. And you know the guy at the food store that's got the, like, the little ticker thing, and he's always clicking it on cans for the prices? I mean, you've seen him at the store everywhere. Well, it's like after they weigh you and they push your little foot on the little ink pad and take your footprint, somebody comes over one of those things, and say we were flowers. It'd be like, well, let's see. Yeah, your parents were this, and this is your political belief, and this is this country you're born in, and this is the color of your skin, and this is... And tack, 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 and before you know it, they're zippering you up into a daisy costume, you know. And maybe there's only 7 species of flowers, so you get to wear a daisy costume because you were born here and born there, and that becomes your identity, and you walk around, and you run into a dandelion or something. You're like, hey, you know, I don't like that guy. They're different than we are. You know, and this it might sound ridiculous, but, I mean, that's just what it is. You know, we're if there's any sin at all, it's our identity. And the only way to... And now you need it because, of course, you need a name and you need an address and you need other stuff. But you don't need to become that, where that's who you are. You know, that stuff, you know, that's why when Paul says you need to let go of knowledge, you need to forget that stuff. That's what he's talking about. You need to let go of anything that makes you separate from other people, because it's the separateness that causes violence and hate. And, you know, when one person has to struggle to be better than another, you know, that whole thing. So letting the identity, you know, ease up a bit brings more unity. Because, like I always say, you know what, I don't care about who's better than who. When the sun burns out, I don't think, like, this particular, you know, the Republicans over here are going to survive and everybody else is going to be dead. I'm pretty sure we all die.
Right. I think that's probably true, yes.
But, so, anyway, but, so for me, you know, choice is really very important. I mean, it's the key. It's the key to finding self. Awareness is, and you're the only, you know, you're the only one that can make the choice for yourself to be vulnerable, to make these decisions, to do that, to look around at what's not serving you. You know, how many people are in relationships that they're empty, but they stay in them because they feel guilty, or they stay in them because they figure they can't get anything better, or people in jobs, the same thing. They stay in a job they hate because they have to. They got to pay the bills, and they don't think they can get anything better. And it's, this is where it's hard to be, you know, where you find yourself. Because, you know, finding yourself means all that's going to change. As soon as you're willing to be present with yourself, aware and vulnerable, and you start taking your layers down through lesson 2 in particular, everything changes because you change. So you might leave that relationship. You might leave that job. You know, your whole world totally flips upside down. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing if you're brave enough to do it. But it's so happy on the other side, you know, because you're at least, you know, you're just, you realize that you're just consciousness. And not for nothing, an identity can't sit outside. You know, when you sit outside and there's a huge, beautiful, fat moon in the sky, a beautiful dark night filled with stars, and you're just present with that. And you realize that, you know what, there's not like a tree frog hanging out doing this right now. Nothing on the planet is doing this. But the consciousness behind your eyes is able to sit there and just enjoy the moon for what it is. I mean, that's who you really are, that consciousness. And in that place, you can say, wow, you know what, that's why I made that. Well, I could sit here and be conscious with how beautiful that is, because who else is doing it? Nobody. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's the difference between the mind and who you really are, which is just absolute, pure, beautiful consciousness. So when you're conscious, you're love. And when you're in your head, you're everything else.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, that's probably deep. But, you know, like I said, I'm really, you know, a little bit of sleep. So if you could lead me into, you know, anything else.
Well, I was going to ask you, maybe you could talk, because, you know, one of the things that really stuck out to me when you were working with the lessons, especially lesson two, was all the poetry and the artwork you did, and you discussed, talked a little bit about it earlier in saying that, well, you kind of have to, when it comes to your art, you have to set aside that little inner voice that says, oh, I'm not good at art, I'm not good at, you know, I'm not good at poetry. And I'm quite familiar with that little voice, because I come from a PhD program, right? I have a background in biology and logic and hard science. And so that's you build up that voice, and what happens a lot of time is that sort of, right, the right brain side of you gets really dominant, and then when the left brain side tries to do anything, it gets shut down real quick, right? And the artwork can be a really valuable way of exploring yourself, right, and exploring who you are. And so I just wonder maybe if you would talk a little bit about how you used your art and maybe how you kind of learned to forget that voice that was talking about, you know, the little critical voice that says, you know, that wasn't a straight line or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a really intelligent question, James. And, you know, yeah, that little voice is, that's the ego parts of you. And, you know, like I said before, when you're a little kid, your little self, you know, you do whatever you have to do to survive. But when you get older, that part of you that kept you alive as a little kid is now kind of killing you. So it's trying to keep you safe and protect you, and it doesn't want to change. The ego doesn't, it loves familiarity. So you want to grow and you want to express yourself. So, of course, it doesn't want to grow. It's threatened. It doesn't want to change. And your mind, in a sense, it's like a computer. It just stores information. It's a tool. But sadly, most of the time, it runs us. It makes our decisions. It you know, we're like animals. It tells us when we need sex, when we need to go eat junk food, when we need to go get drunk. It's all the mind, the emotional body controlling us, making our decisions. So, of course, it says, yeah, you can't draw. You suck. Just put it down. You know what? Let's go watch the game over there. Why don't you make some of that, like, popcorn, and let's sit down and have a beer and hell with it. We'll do it tomorrow. That's exactly right. It's exactly what it is. And the reason that I got past that place was because I got to sit with that little child, and I love to refer to that child as, if you've ever seen a kid at the food store in a shopping cart strapped in, if you're lucky, there's a seatbelt. And I'm a mom, so I know. It's screaming. The kid is screaming and yelling, okay? Screaming and yelling, wants to get out of the cart. And, you know, there's nothing more annoying than listening to that in the store. And the mom is like, you know, the patience button is pushed all the way to the max, giving it cookies, giving it juice, giving the child whatever the heck she can give it so it'll please be quiet and not embarrass her. And all the while, all anybody else can think of is, well, if that were my kid, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So that's the ego. The ego has to have its own way constantly. And so I got to sit with 6 months with myself, away from everything, and I cut everything out of my life except what I absolutely could not cut, And I had to listen to that little kid in a shopping cart scream and yell at me for everything it needed. And I just made the choice to let it talk and ignore everything it was saying, because I never went out and did what it said I should do so I could find value, so I could attach to something to find love. I said, no, I'm going to find it right now, right here with me. And so I chose to do nurturing things. So a lot of my poetry, in fact, Dark Night of the Soul that you printed, was a very, very scary place, because you're in that place of, you know, you're letting go of attachments. You're letting go of feeding off anything else that will make you feel like love. Because you can't get love from anything outside you. You can't. It's not possible for anybody else to be responsible for your happiness. And nobody's responsible for anything to do with you. You're the only one that can make yourself happy. You're the only one that can make yourself miserable. So this is all a personal thing. I mean, that's an awesome question. So my mandalas, and I'm actually working on a piece right now that I shared with Paul. It goes through my beginning experience, my first mandalas, and then the mandalas tell the story, kind of, which is going to be a lot better than how I'm trying to describe it all in this call. But when I first started to draw, it was awful. But I was drawing as a child, you know. And as I healed, and you've seen some of my, the one mandala I just sent in that was just in the forum, the giving and receiving mandala. I mean, I never drew anything like that in my life. I can't draw with anything. But it started to evolve, and when I sit to draw a mandala, I just let it express. And whatever comes out just comes out. And it's beautiful. And the nice thing about most mandalas is they share a piece. There's such a beautiful picture of where you are psychically, kind of. You know, you'll see your, you know, where you're past, where you've come from, where you're going, and then you'll see where you currently are. And in all my mandalas, there's that presence of I guess you'd call it eternity. You know, that's like if you look outside in the spring and there's a tree that's naked and there's a leaf that hasn't yet fallen off from the fall and there's a little bud that hasn't quite opened up yet. I mean, that's all there is. That's time all stuck together, you know. And mandalas for me are like that. It's just this quick little photograph of what's happening inside your child, you know, the mindset, and inside, you know, what your soul is expressing. They're just so cool, you know, so I really love them.
They really are cool. They're one of my favorite parts of the PPS program.
Yeah, so, and again, in doing that, in writing, or whatever the expression is, so when you're healing self, and you're going through these painful, painful lessons, and, you know, it's not easy to sit down and say to yourself, God, I'm arrogant. I'm a hypocrite, I'm a this or that. You know, it's pretty shaming to be in that place. So you nurture yourself. So you do things that are loving for yourself, no matter what it is, whether it's going, getting a massage, or painting a picture, or, you know, writing a poem, or whatever. See, we're all like I said this with Paul once, you know, in like a wetlands, we're all reeds, basically. And the wind that blows through all of us, you know, one of us blows through all of us. It's like one artist, many portraits. So once we get to be ourselves and we start clearing out, you know, you're who you really are, you're going to manifest in a way like nobody else. So who knows what's inside there? You know, when you become yourself, you're no longer trying to be, you know, you might, like I said, you might leave your career. You might not want to be a veterinarian anymore. You might end up going over and doing something totally different that you really love. Now that you're not doing it because maybe mom wanted you to or dad wanted you to, you know, or you're just hopping from one thing to another, you're actually finding yourself. So you'll create and nurture yourself and however it's for you. Because nobody's experience is like anybody else's. You know, I was just, you know, I've learned so much from my own experience that since we're all a bunch of locks out there, you know, everybody's words that come in, maybe it's a key that might land. You know, you ever see in cartoons, the little musical notes, somebody's playing an instrument and the musical notes are flying in the air?
Yes.
Well, you know,
yeah.
Every time you read an Osho or Eckhart Tolle or you hear Paul talk or you hear a mentor talk or anything, there, you know, if one little note goes in your ear and unlocks something, you know, then you use that however you can to help yourself grow your own way, in a sense, you know. But, again, it's all in making the choice to not be a slave to what the mind wants you to do. And it's like I said, that it's so hard and shaming to walk away from the loyalty of family. And the hard part is when you're not even aware or conscious that that's what's holding you back. So it's just a process and an unfolding. And, you know, like for me, lesson two, I've told Paul before, you could just make lesson two all by itself.
Yeah.
Just make a whole 12-month program out of lesson two. Because it's just, you know, it's just wonderful. It was so completely life-changing for me. And, you know, of course your life still has challenges and different things, but it's not nearly as much of a struggle as it used to be, you know. It's just, it's more peaceful. You know, you're not in the extremes anymore. Like you said, you know, that Monopoly game. You know, you land on somebody's hotel on Boardwalk, God, it sucks. You know?
Yeah.
Land on free parking, the middle's full with money, that's great. You know, the highs and the lows are gone.
Yeah.
When you find self. And are there still moments? Absolutely, they have to be. But, you know, anyway, so through my, you know, I hope to offer more articles and more pieces and, you know, I'd love to talk about, so there's so many other topics I'd love to talk about. And now when I get to California, see, it'll be 6 o'clock there and I'll be a lot fresher and a lot sharper and it'll be, you know, being on the East Coast makes it a little hard for me because I'm way past my bedtime.
Well, I understand, and it gets 9 o'clock gets rapidly past my bedtime too, where I am. So I certainly sympathize. But you know, I remember all of your artwork very well, and a lot of it actually brought back to me the importance and the way that art can be very valuable in revealing kind of who you are to yourself in a much more transparent way, because the right brain side of your mind wants to dialogue and wants to analyze, and it's a very cognitive process, and so it's always filtered through that internal dialogue, where art comes through very cleanly and purely and almost unfiltered.
Yeah, but it's hard to, for me anyway, in my own experience, I could never read my mandalas in the beginning. I could never read what they were. I used to always have to go to Paul, you know, or send them to him and say, what is this? Or I'd run into New York when he was in town and say, oh, look what my mandala, what does this mean? So, but then as you start drawing more and more, you know, you kind of already know what it means, you know, because you're getting in touch with yourself.
Yeah.
So it gets a lot easier. And then, of course, when you see other mandalas, then it gets even more fun, you know. But, you know, there's nothing more fun and more exciting than to be doing this right now. And like I said, with everything going on in the world right now, I mean, you know, everybody says they're loving everyone. And really nobody's out there loving, because it's really hard to love. It really is. It's hard to be in the middle. It's hard to allow somebody in your life who is just annoying and driving you crazy, just allowing them to be who they are and not letting them get into your center. You know, that's very difficult. And, you know, I closed a marriage of 17 years with absolute love and gratitude. And, you know, it's shocking to everybody around us how great we get along. People are so uncomfortable around us. In fact, they'll tell Dan, you know, she doesn't love you because you're divorced. So she can't love you. But, you know, I had to move through that place because I realized he was my father. You know, I realized that why I married him, what I was, and, you know, I needed to heal it regardless of him personally. But through healing that, now we're actually, you know, we really do love each other, you know, and we have a really wonderful, loving divorce relationship, and the kids are getting along great, and it just freaks people out. But, you know, hating somebody's easy. It's really easy to cut somebody out of your life. It's easy to call somebody a jerk. It's easy to give somebody the finger. I mean, everybody does it. You know, it's so much more rewarding to go to the other side and just, you know, work at being loved for yourself first. Once you can do that, then it's really a lot easier to allow other people to make mistakes and be jerks and say things that they didn't mean, and, you know, because we all have to grow out of that place. And it's important also that we choose to embrace our emotions. That was something I meant to say earlier. You know, there are so many people out there that think the bad emotions are bad. Anger's bad. I shouldn't show this. I shouldn't show that. And a lot of times they just hold everything in and they just try to stay happy on the outside. And all this stuff, like I was saying before, the duality of life, you've got to enjoy all the emotions, not just the good ones. So embrace them all. You know, learn how to express anger, because anger blossoms into compassion. And the more we become filled with emotions, we're more sensitive, living, beautiful creatures, you know, that can offer that to others. And I've heard people criticize me before saying, you know, you talk about your past, you know, with compassion. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't share your past like that. You should talk about it, but there shouldn't be any emotion behind it. And I couldn't disagree with that more. You know, my little child took a lot of beatings when she was little, and not for nothing, she went through a lot. So when I talk about my past, I'm going to share it with some emotion. I'm not going to share it like I'm a robot and it didn't mean anything. It's ridiculous. How could you talk about, you know, your son dying in Vietnam or something, like, yeah, well, you know, that's what happened. You know, whatever. It's all done. It's ridiculous. So we need to embrace, you know, just embrace life. Embrace all there is. Allow it all to be what it is. And just, you know, stay in the middle. So...
Well, that was wonderful, and I've had my share of questions, so I want to, make sure that anybody who's on the line, we've got a few minutes. Is there anybody who would like to talk to Chris? Anybody who has questions for her? Well, you know, sometimes there was an awful lot to really think about there, and that's okay. The recording, we recorded this, and we're going to be posting that on the site, and everybody who is with us can listen to it again and again, and if they have questions, they can get in touch with you through our mentoring services site. You have a profile there; they can contact you that way, and like I said, lots to think about.
Yes, well, I really appreciate the time, and I do apologize for not being 100%. Like I said, it was a very long evening last night, and it is late here for me. So,
well, you know, as I always tell Paul whenever he's jet-lagged, that we will always take Paul when he's at 50%, and we'll always take you at whatever percent you have to offer to us.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, James.
You're welcome. Well, thank you once again for talking to us tonight. And I want to encourage anyone that feels as though they could benefit from Chris's coaching to have a look at her mentor profile on our website at www.ppssuccess.com. And you can find her Chris's profile in the PPS Mentoring Services section once you're there. Just a quick update. Our next PPS mentor teleclass will be Dr. Brian Allman, who's going to be talking about personal transformation how-tos on March 16th at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. So thanks again, Chris, for joining us. That was just so wonderful. And I, as I always say, I feel a little bit selfish moderating these, because I always get so much out of these calls, and I certainly did tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it, James. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. All right, everybody, thanks again for joining us, and we will talk to you next week on our next teleclass. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.